Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
One of the most fundamental ways we engage with the world around us is through sound. Our capacity to make and hear sound has led to music, to language, and with that, the development of humans as a social creature capable of learning and building societies. And we're joined this morning by Dr. Shane Bergen from the UCD School of Education to take a closer look at sound. A closer look and a closer listen, Shane. Yes, perhaps.
Absolutely.
So we'll start with the contentious one. What is the difference between noise and music?
I know it's contentious. I'm kind of tempted to say it's taste, right? But there is a difference. So as I'm speaking to you, my vocal cords are vibrating, and vibration is the source of all sound, right? So in there, within my mouth, there are vocal cords, and they're vibrating, and they cause the air around them to vibrate. And so that vibration travels as a wave out into the room to the microphone or to your ears, and you're able to hear me. Incidentally, if there was no air between us, you wouldn't hear me. So there's no noise in space. So all those sound effects that you see in Star Wars and Star Trek, while it's great, they don't make any sense mm-hmm. to a scientist looking at them. But the difference between musical noise and just regular noise is the nature of how much you can control the vibration, right? So a musical note has a repeating pattern. So if I were to blow into this little bottle here that I have in front of me, if you listen, you'll hear a note, right? And so I'm causing the air in the bottle to vibrate, and it vibrates at a steady rate, and so it creates a musical note. If I were to bang on the table, which I know is a big no-no in a radio station, it's a more chaotic noise. I can control the volume of both, but I can only control the pitch of the bottle. I can't control the pitch of just walloping
the table. Can't you control the tapping on the...
That's just volume, but you couldn't make it a higher pitched or a lower pitched sound.
Okay.
Our voices are able to do that, right? Because I can whistle, I could even sing if I wanted to, or ask you to sing.
You're welcome to sing, Shane. No
and we'd
problem.
Recognise that as music. And so it's a matter of being able to control basic sound vibrations that leads to what we call music. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful gift it is for us to have.
Certainly is. Musical instruments then, how are they making their sounds? Is that based on the same principle?
Yes, it is. So musical instruments are, when we think of the orchestra, right, we think of this amazing array of instruments that we might have, 100 plus people sitting on a stage with all sorts of things made from different materials, different shapes and sizes. But fundamentally, they all work by creating controlled vibrations, right? So if you were to take a piece of string, right, a piece of metal string, and you were to stretch it, you could pluck it and it will vibrate in a very controlled way. And if you vary either the thickness of the string or the length of the string, you can control the pitch, right? So the note.
Or how taut it is.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Another one, you can tighten it. Exactly. That's how you tune in a guitar. So the piano that you play has an array of strings of different length and size. And each string is hit with a hammer. If you play the middle C, that string vibrates 256 times every second. It causes the piano to vibrate. It causes the air around it to vibrate. And that's how we hear the sound. And then you think about, well, how do I play the different notes? We have all the different strings inside. They're either different thicknesses, or they're different tightness, or they're different lengths. And so by constructing this, and it really does take a lot of skill, you can make what we will call the keyboard. And so you can go from a C up to the next C, right, a scale, an octave, we call it in music. And you have all the notes in between. And it's just a little bit random that we've given them the do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do names, right? Mm-hmm. Just like the last time we were chatting about colour, the fact that we have seven colours in the rainbow is just a little bit random, because there's almost an infinite number of notes in an octave, but we've broken them up into eight notes, right? And they are chosen because they have a particular mathematical symmetry, right? So they kind of blend well together. And so we can play them in different combinations, and they sound appealing to our ears because the ratios between their different frequencies make mathematical sense.
So that works for us, for the human ear. And so we've decided that this is what we'll all
absolutely
abide by.
And it's a little bit cultural. So we tend in the West to end songs on the do, right? And that's a little bit cultural. Irish music doesn't always necessarily do that. If you go to the East, their musical notation is completely different to ours. So it's a little bit learned, but it's also built on fundamental mathematics. It's just really appealing to us, right? But you're asking me about instruments, the different orchestra. I've only mentioned strings, yeah. Right? There's also what we would call woodwind or wind-based instruments. So we can blow into them. So I blew into the bottle, right? So it's effectively a pipe that's closed at one end and opened at the other, and it's able to make a note. If I could change the length of that pipe, right, either using my fingers or just having pipes a different length, I'd be able to make lots of different notes. You could make a pipe organ, right, or you could make a flute. You could make it with different material. So it could be a wooden flute. You could even put a little piece of vibrating wood at the top of it, and it would give it a woody sound. So you could have a clarinet.
So that's all related to the use of air, isn't it?
Yeah, so they're all air-based instruments, but they're all fundamentally causing vibration. So when I blow into the bottle, I'm causing the air within it to vibrate. When I pluck the string, I'm causing the string to vibrate. Or if I even hit a drum, the last family, the percussion, I'm causing the skin on the drum to vibrate as well. So while they're all different shapes and sizes and made from different materials, fundamentally, they're all trying to create vibrations. And the person who plays the instrument is skilled at being able to control them in terms of their pitch and in terms of their volume.
Mm-hmm. And some people are particularly skilled and gifted when it comes to being able to play and to find those beautiful sounds that we're so familiar with.
Oh, yeah. And not just the players, but the people that can make instruments, right? Mm-hmm. What's the difference between a cheap violin that you might buy in a shop and a Stradivarius, right? It's the material that it's made from. So there's a massive skill that goes into producing and making musical instruments. There's a reason that good pianos cost tens of thousands of euros, if not more. But something that you said there is, as I smiled because you said, you know, this idea of being able to play an instrument or even to sing. I think a lot of us tell ourselves we're not musical, but there's something quite fundamental about being able to produce music as a person, right? Virtually none of us are tone deaf, right? The very few people are tone deaf. So why then aren't we all fantastic singers?
Mm-hmm.
It's like anything else. It's practice and it's courage. Right, so we have to sing and we have to practice, we have to play for us to become comfortable with it.
So you're saying anybody can learn how to sing well?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about playing a musical instrument? Because, I mean, we know from our own lived experience that there are some people who are very gifted musically, like a child. You'll see, you know,
yeah.
You look at your own children and you go, well, that child doesn't have a note in their head. And the next one can reproduce what they hear almost instantly. Is that not an innate gift?
Well, there's a nature-nurture argument here, right? There most certainly would be a genetic component to your skill. But it's also not a coincidence that kids who are musical grow up in houses that are full of musical instruments.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So they're exposed to them and they're encouraged. And it's like anything. If you're playing with it for long enough, if you love it, you'll get into it. Why would you love it? Because people tell you that sounds great. And, they might sing along with you. Music is, as much as we often think of it as a solo thing, it's also very much a communal thing. There's a lot of studies that show the benefits of singing in choirs or playing in orchestras, that doing something together with other people is very beneficial.
So the human voice then, you've touched on this, but tell us more about the human voice as an instrument.
The ultimate instrument, right? And most of us can sing over about an octave and a half. And then there were fantastic people like Freddie Mercury was famous for singing over multiple octaves, right? So a massive range. And again, it's like anything else we do that we become very skilled at. Practice makes perfect. It's a muscle and you can tune it and you can work on your breathing so that you better control over it. It can even do remarkable things. The legend is that the opera singer that can fill an entire auditorium, right, without a microphone, he or she has practiced to learn how to breathe. And they might have great control over their voice. The legend I'm thinking of is the opera singer breaking the wine glass.
Yes,
yes.
With the high pitch.
Yeah. I've never seen it happen, but I've been able to reproduce it. I run a music and science program with the National Concert Hall called Quavers to Quadratics. It's for kids. They play with ideas common to science and music. And they're led by the undergraduate students I teach in UCD and some from Trinity. And one year we took a wine glass and we played different musical notes beside the wine glass. And when we were able to tune in the speaker that was playing the note to what we call the natural frequency of the wine glass, we were able to get the glass to move. Now, what's the natural frequency? You know, you get a wine glass and you just flick it with your finger. It gives a nice ding yes. sound. That's what's called its natural frequency. Now, if you could sing that exact note or play that note to the wine glass will start to kind of sing along with it, right? Mm-hmm. It's called resonance. And you put it in a big plastic box, right, that's transparent so we don't get any glass in our eyes. And we tune it in very, very carefully. And eventually you'll start to see the glass starts to breathe, right? So it literally starts to move. You stick a strobe light on it, you can see that movement even more. And if you crank up the volume, the glass will bend and bend and bend until it cannot bend anymore. It's a fragile material and it will catastrophically shatter, right? I've done this with kids for years.
It's extraordinary to watch,
is
it?
Great fun to do it, yeah. So, of course, you have to do it in the plastic box. And unless you had the science gear, you probably couldn't do it at home. You'd want to mind your eyes. But it is fantastic. I've never heard of an opera singer being able to do it themselves.
And can you create that natural frequency with that glass bottle now that we've used so much while we've been chatting?
Absolutely. Just so I put it down in the desk. If I were to, it's a little bit faint because it's very thick. There, your listeners might be able to hear that kind of ding, ding, ding sound.
So that's what you would be trying to match then with
exactly.
your sounds.
Yeah. So and if people are having a cup of tea at home, if you get the teaspoon and just tap it off the side of the ceramic cup or water glass they might be drinking, they'll hear that natural frequency. And if the glass is thin enough, right, and your speaker is loud enough, you might be able to get the things in your kitchen to start moving.
You're spurring people on to do all sorts of experiments now, Shane. What about the sounds then that our ears can't hear?
Yeah, so the human ear is amazing, right? We have two of them so that we can not just hear things, but we can also get depth perception. But our ears can hear things that move between 20 times a second and 20,000 times a second from low to high pitch. But there are a lot of notes that we can't hear. And as we age, we tend not to be able to hear those very high-pitched sounds, mainly because our ears are just getting old, or we've listened to very loud music that has literally overstretched the eardrum in our ear, like putting on a jumper and stretching it to
or
help.
You have headphones on every day for work purposes.
I'm sensing a claim, yeah. But yeah, your ear, it is extraordinary. But there are animals that can hear things that we can't hear, like bats, famously. They sense their world using something called echolocation. They emit high frequency chirps, and that senses the room around them. It bounces back to their fantastic ears and they're able to paint a picture. It's like being able to see through sound.
But the light affects that system, doesn't it, for bats? So if there's light outside in the darkness, we were discussing bats last week, artificial light at nighttime disrupts their travel because they become disorientated.
Oh, wow.
That's what I learned last
week
anyway, Shane. Poor things,
goodness. But they are able to hear extraordinarily high things. So are dogs. Dog whistles when you blow into them, you shouldn't be able to hear. A couple of years ago, supermarket chains were emitting these high-pitched squeals to deter teenagers who can hear the high-pitched noises from hanging around. Mm-hmm. Older people couldn't hear them. Of course, whatever about how annoying it is to deter teenagers from hanging around, they have a right to hang around. I also always thought about kids going in. They were able to hear them as well, particularly kids in buggies that mightn't be able to tell you what's that awful noise.
I wonder, did it work?
It kind of did and it didn't. It worked for the kids when they turned it around, and kids started using these high-pitched squeals as ringtones during school so they could hear the beeps coming in and their teachers couldn't.
Good for them, in a way. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the programme the noises that people can't stand, and even talking about them makes me cringe, but the nails on a blackboard, or even for some people chalk on a blackboard, drives them wild. Why is that? What's getting to us?
Yeah, and for some it can even be the tone of people's voices that just irritates them. Mm-hmm. And it can be a real, like, it's a real feeling. You get those sort of shivers as you hear it. There are certain noises, and people have studied this as to why they're so irritating. It's thought that the shape of the ear plays a big factor here. So your ear is a certain shape. And remember earlier on, I was talking about wine glasses that will ding and sing at a
yes.
certain note. Your ear has this particular note as well that it is most sensitive to. And so it's thought that things that vibrate 2,500 times a second are said to be the most annoying pitch or the most annoying note. So if you're thinking of the nails on the hammer or a glass being scraped by a knife or a certain notes you might hear, it's thought that they're emitting frequencies that are close to that annoying frequency.
But what might annoy me might not annoy you, is that right?
Yeah, there'd be slight variations. musicians, because your ear shape might be slightly different to mine, but they'll always be in and around the 2,500 hertz, 2,500 times a second. I encourage your listeners to go to YouTube and type in 2,500 hertz, and they'll be able to play that note. It's really annoying. I did give it to your producer, but I imagine she doesn't want to inflict that on the listeners. But
who would want to? Now, we're all going to be trying to shatter glasses and find those annoying noises on YouTube. Shane, thanks so much. Great to see you again. Shane Bergen there from the UCD School of Education. One break left to take. Let's do it.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.